They got this new Cole
coming out. All right, testing 1-2, testing 1-2.
Cole is reliable. I say reliable to kill you. Reliable death. Accelerant.
Testing 1-2, testing 1-2. Okay, so I think we're back on the air here. But it's definitely a problem at Skype headquarters, which would be Microsoft. Now they own them. So there's a problem with Skype all over, at least in our part of the country here right now. That's interesting. Want to figure out, you know, what the heck that's all about. All right. Well, on the subject of the illegitimacy of the Trump presidency.
That's a subject I like. I like to hear that more. That's my favorite subject right now.
Yeah. I think that as long as Trump can hold the Republican Party to him, mm-hmm. In one way or another, that all these efforts will fail, at least for the short term. But there is a question of whether he can hold that together. But, you know, the problem is those guys are so compromised by, you know, all the sordid stuff that they've done over the past, especially, for a long time now. I mean,
right.
It started,
yeah, since 1968.
It got worse and worse with, I mean, Reagan was terrible. And the Gingrich, you know, era was, you know, just pathetic. And now we have this. Bush was a disaster.
Total disaster.
And now we've got more of it. We've got something even worse. But nonetheless, so I'm not sure whether, you know, the John McCains, the alleged Mavericks, etc. I don't know whether they're going to be able to do anything. They're clearly upset about some parts of it. I know everybody's, you know, the whole interference of Russia in the election,
The voter suppression, the voter intimidation, the discarded ballots, the 87 voting machines that broke down on election day in Detroit. You know, to me, John, the question is not so much whether or not the Electoral College will deny Trump the presidency. Most of us don't think that will happen.
Well, they might. I mean,
they could vote against him, but then the House. It's put before the House, and this House is not going to jerk the rug out from under it. But the real question to me is, can we put before the American people enough evidence to convince the American people that resistance to Trump's agenda is patriotism? Resistance to Trump's agenda is patriotism, because his agenda flies in the face of the U.S. Constitution, flies in the face of American traditions, flies in the face of American values. When you say, this is the United States of America, which was the first country in the history of the world to say that your religion shall not be held, or your lack of religion shall not be held against you. So when Trump says we're going to create a registry of all Muslims in America. All Muslims in America. A registry. Much like the Nazis did in Germany prior to World War II in the 1930s, after Hitler took power in the putsch of 1933. And Trump says he's going to create a registry of Muslims. That is absolutely opposed to what my Southern Baptist minister dad taught me from a very young age, that one of the founding principles of America is the absolute separation of church and state, the absolute separation of church and state. That is a fundamental American value. Whether Trump's decision to put the last voice in his ear before going to bed at night and the first voice in his ear upon waking in the morning, the neo-fascism of Steve Bannon, violates the American values. And so can we assure the American people that his election was invalid in some fundamental value-based way, so that we know that folks who would not protest the American president under any other circumstances know that it is their patriotic duty to resist this presidency and this president's agenda for America?
Okay.
And starting from that point,
I've just declared it illegitimate, and
that's very important. Yeah. You are an opinion leader. That's very important.
The, I think that every effort to prevent him from, you know, forming a government, so to speak, ought to be applauded, mm-hmm. and. I'm a little concerned about the labor movement's actual ability to influence matters here. For example, there's now a new debate that's erupted within the leadership of the AFL-CIO over the entry of Tom Perez, the labor
sure.
secretary,
yeah.
as a
yeah.
contender for the DNC chair position,
right.
And complicated by the fact, of course, that Keith Ellison from Minnesota, right?
Right.
Has already gotten a lot of endorsements, and I believe, actually, the AFL-CIO, the council has done
right.
so.
Right, the AFL-CIO Executive Council, which is
right.
the premier decision-making body of all the unions in America, right. between conventions, has endorsed Keith Ellison, which is, I think, a wonderful thing.
But apparently, there's been some opposition from the firefighters.
Yes.
The plumbers, I believe, also that think that Perez would be or now Perez. But I think the vote on the council took place when Perez was not yet a candidate for the job. So, so I was going to create a little bit of dissension, I would say, at some point, but. Not that we don't already have that. I was responding to yesterday to somebody was posting a response to this article that came out about the Clinton campaign's errors in Michigan. It mm-hmm. didn't have a ground game, didn't really mobilize, whatever, took something for granted, but whatever, some of the same errors that have been aired were opinions on errors in her campaign that have been aired in many places, but I was reminded of our good friend that Melissa Bernardi, who's very active campaigner in Oakland County anyway, and matter of fact was the campaign manager for one of the few Democrats that won,
uh-huh.
Which was the county treasurer, I think, in Oakland County. Anyway, and she had remarked to me, and so had. You know, her husband, who visits machine tool plants all over the place, since he sells machine tools,
mm-hmm.
That in the UAW shops where there are the two-tier wage thing came into being, there's quite a few young workers with Trump signs on their toolboxes or lunchboxes.
Right.
And that therefore the union didn't have their own mobilization was compromised by these bad concessions that have been made in the past, and so somebody was was nailing the UAW for doing that, and then I always liked doing this because I was reminded that in the Machine Tool Valley in New England we never did that. We never agreed to any of those two-tier arrangements. We said to hell with that, and if we had to strike them, we did. But not one of those machine tool shops is left.
Right.
So, in a little bit, all these unions, there's terrible internal arguments that take place over, which way to go on all these things, but... you know, we got this lousy choice of, well, you can fight and die, or you can concede and get some kind of social cancer that ends up making it so you can't mobilize your members against Trump, which is, you know, another form of labor death. I'm labor union death, I think, coming on the horizon here.
Yeah, given the fact that Trump wants to destroy the American labor movement. But let us be quick to tell our listeners that two-tier wage system, which John and I and millions of other trade unionists, JB, I'm certain, millions of other trade unionists detest, was central to saving the American auto industry. That two-tier wage system was bargained on in the fight after the Bush financial services system completely melted down to save the American auto industry. And it was bargained on by probably the UAW's, United Auto Workers, most far-sighted and progressive president since Walter Reuther, Bob King, as part of the package to save the big three. So it's, you know, we don't like it. But that's why we call it collective bargaining. When management and workers through their union can decide what's in the best interest of the workers, what will keep the industry alive and the employer alive. And it's a big problem, and it's why we need much more concerted efforts at the grassroots of the economy to build consumer demand and to build the ability for manufacturing to thrive in the United States. You know, there were many, many mistakes made in this past election. But the biggest mistake, I think, is the failure to focus on the kind of economic issues that Bernie Sanders talked about in every speech.
What's going on? We plan to do a new chair.
Free parking doesn't start till tomorrow.
Oh. You know, before 9, you can park in the back here before 9:30.
You never told me.
I just did now. I never told you. Told everybody that asked.
Where do you park in Shepherdstown?
Well, it's true. You got they have a very aggressive meter collection process here in Shepherdstown, and I mean it has to do in a way with if everybody parks out here all day, then there's none of the shops have any business at all because nobody can park at all. So I mean there is a certain the local businesses kind of feel two ways about it. No, they don't want all their customers to get fines. On the other hand, you know, if students park there all day,
right,
there won't be any business right. done at all. And so there you go. That's just the frying pan of the hot. Well, you know, I hear you, when you violate the principle of equal pay for equal work. Okay, mm-hmm. You're inviting a cancer into your organization. There's no way around that, and so you can end up having a vote, you know, to accept it under duress. But right. But you've just given yourself cancer, and I don't know what's in a way there's no good choice there. I mean, unless you change the equation. A little bit, you know, but we're not in now. We're going to be weaker than before, at least on the collective bargaining front. And I'm wondering how the thing that's going to make the Trump thing ungovernable is that it's frankly way too big a country. and way too complicated a country to, go waving your wand various places.
Right.
And think that, you know, institutions are going to follow. And if you have enough, and if these institutions stop working, the healthcare services of West Virginia, for example, the roads, the security situation, there's no question that that's going to cause a tremendous backlash that is, I think, going to be too difficult to do. But against it is the fact that we have an administration of almost exclusively billionaires.
Right.
Heading nearly every
agency, every cabinet,
every
post.
Agency. But you know, for example, in the SEC and in the I expect in some other agencies, the top level leadership of those agencies are leaving.
Yes.
Already. And because they find that what Trump's talking about in various dimensions is basically nullifies the purpose of the agency, like the Labor Department.
Right.
Have an anti-labor person and running the Labor Department. You know, have an anti-environmental person running the EPA. You know, have an anti-equality person running the Justice Department.
Right.
You know, having it's just one thing. You have a guy running national security now who's a loose cannon.
Right.
Okay. Flynn.
Right.
And then who's
What about Bolton? He's in there too.
Oh, what's he doing now?
He's deputy homeland security.
Well, right. And he's a guy that should have been arrested years ago.
Yeah.
For treason. He's a scumbag of the first order. And so, but it doesn't matter. I mean, they're all little Himmlers, okay?
Right.
And they're gonna make those institutions not function at all.
And that is what we have to communicate with our fellow Americans. Now, John Case, let me ask you this: where is Secretary of State in line for the presidency of the United States? Third.
Oh, really?
Yeah. After the
so Rex could be president.
Yes.
If somebody something terrible happens to Trump,
a multinational corporatist,
yeah,
who has more loyalty to his multinational corporate business.
He never worked for anybody else.
Never worked for anybody else. Worked his way up for 40 years.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, they never say where he started.
They said he was a clerk.
Worked his way up. From filing papers to become CEO of one of the world's largest corporations, which has no national boundaries, none.
That's right, and he's good buddies with Putin.
Putin did a 500. Listen, wrap your mind around this figure. Rex Tillerson did a 500 billion. That's billion with a B, $500 billion deal between ExxonMobil and the Russian Federation for oil exploration in Russia's lands, including the Arctic Circle, that has profound implications for the rest of the world outside of any loyalty to the United States of America. And that is the so-called president-elect's pick to be the Secretary of State and to define national interest across the world. John's rant is absolutely right, but the point is that all of us have to take it to heart and have to be prepared in our own ways to resist this presidency. Starting with the fact that he does not have a mandate, that he did not get elected by the popular vote, and that even his electoral college election is in doubt right now.
Okay, so it's in doubt. I think I'm all for it. You know, let's put the pressure on. You know, even if Hillary had been elected,
right?
you know, the size of this anti-establishment, whatever, you know, this fascist, vote for a fascist.
Right.
Is got, you know, portends, you know, such serious problems for the country. Even if she had been elected, you know, I think she would have had to address this first. Mm-hmm. Because it's just not, you know, I don't think we can go forward with either as, certainly with a, as a ruling, with, you know, group, whatever, whoever they are. We can't, it's not going to work. And, but then, you know, you get these folks that, you know, have no respect for, not very much respect for democracy. They're not really, I mean, you know, what does Exxon Mobil think about democracy?
Well, nothing.
They don't think about it at all.
Right.
Except it's something to manipulate.
Right.
And so I'm...
But, you know, let's remind ourselves, John needs a big plate of biscuits and gravy this morning.
We're going to have to get it over in Charlestown this morning.
Yes, we are.
We're going
But let's remember that just 24% of the electorate voted for Donald Trump. That a majority of voters stayed at home on Election Day. And voters don't make up our entire population. I know that a lot of people's children, mine included, my teenagers, were seriously upset with the election of Donald Trump. Let's not forget that he was not elected by the majority of the American people or the majority of American voters. We had an exceedingly low turnout across America. Quite frankly, they did everything they could to still manipulate the election. They being the Republican Party and the neo-fascists that make up the support of Donald Trump. 87 voting machines were not working on Election Day morning in Detroit. Those were all Hillary votes. 87,000 ballots got lost. 300,000 people were taken off the rolls in Wisconsin. we had voting rights protections roll back in state after state after state when we allowed the Voting Rights Act to sunset. And we had this incredible institutional effort on the part of the radical right wing and the Republican Party, which are now more and more the same, to deny average Americans the right to vote in this past election. We had the interference by a foreign government, Russia, which now 17 American security agencies have documented. We had Putin's own personal involvement in the scheme to manipulate the U.S. elections. You know, we had this massive, massive effort to frustrate the will of the American people and elect Donald Trump president of the United States.
So,
So we have to all understand that. That's where we, that's sort of the foundation of our thinking going forward from here, that he does not have a mandate. He does not represent the will of the American people.
No.
Right.
I mean, he's representing the 1%.
Right.
He's going to give tax cuts to the rich again.
Right.
I mean, this is just ludicrous.
Yeah.
Cut all the social programs. I mean, you know, We all in the back of our minds thought, you know, something bad could happen.
Right.
You know, but now he's showing us what it is. He's unabashed at putting it out there that these are my guys. These are the guys that are supposedly draining the swamp.
Instead, I think most of us would agree that the swamp is filling very fast. The swamp is swampier than it ever was, ever, you know.
The muck gets deeper.
Yeah, I mean, it's quicksand.
Right.
It's quicksand is what it is. And anything the Electoral College can do to rescue us,
right,
rescue our democracy,
right,
needs to be done here in the next several days. I mean, this is historic.
Right.
And if they can overturn it,
right,
you know, the early prediction, the early results that right. were really based on conjecture.
Right.
Right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, sure.
Until they vote, it's conjecture. Correct, John?
Yes.
It is. Yeah. It's conjecture. So maybe the media will, you know, take this into account for future elections. And, you know, you say the apparent winner.
Right.
Right? You say the apparent winner because, you know, in this case, we had two different results. We had Hillary winning the popular vote by almost 3 million votes. That's substantial.
Yes.
And then, you know, the Electoral College coming in with a result apparently in favor of Trump.
And where else can you hear this kind of dialogue and this kind of commentary in the morning news? We're not making favors with the institutions of political parties in this country. We're just trying to tell you the truth here on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, also known as the Rock of Appalachia, in www.enlightenradio.org. Hey, turn on your friends to Epic Radio, wherever you are. We can all tune in. And every morning between 7:30 and 9 a.m.
during the week,
Eastern Standard Time,
Monday through Friday,
you can hear the truth on Enlightened Radio. Whatever the show is, John Case is going to make sure to bring you the truth every morning.
Well, as far as I can see it.
As far as, and Stuart Acuff is lending John Case some binoculars to see the truth even further.
Okay, let me talk about, I'm going to talk about the issue of equality.
And while you talk about equality, I'm going to make us all some coffee.
There you go, brother.
Coffee, okay.
Yeah.
Make some coffee, settle down, and
right on,
enjoy
brother.
This conversation. Be part of it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I've been reading lots of...
Can I update on the fact that we're not getting our callers today?
Yeah, okay, because the Skype is not working.
Right, we had problems, technical problems, because of the cold, I think. And
apparently
there's storms all over West Virginia.
There might be, but it's not just that. It's there's a national down. Skype is not working anywhere.
Right. So
right now. So
and that's our medium. That's our way.
That's our phone medium.
Yeah, anyway. that's the way we communicate. So we're very sorry about that. We apologize, but really it's out of our hands. There's nothing we can do. So we'll try to reschedule Kenny Perdue, the AFL-CIO president, as well as Mike Mannypenny, our good friend from Taylor County, to come on next week, you know, prior to Christmas, and try to do this over again. But in the meantime, we have so much to talk about, John. I mean, this radio station is just busting at the seams. I mean, we're located right downtown here in Shepherdstown during the Christmas season, the holiday season. We're atop the Four Seasons bookstore, where the Robertus family owns and operates.
Yeah.
And they have all these wonderful books for sale that you can buy your family. You know, by your friends. I mean, they've got a wonderful selection of all the latest books that you can buy for Christmas for your family. And, you know, we still read books the old-fashioned way. We don't have to read them on the computer. And it's still a wonderful thing to have in your library is to look up there and see all the classics and all the latest bestsellers.
Here's the notice from Skype.
Okay,
for over 7 hours now, Skype users around the world, including the U.S. and Canada, are having problems signing into the application on their PCs and smartphones. Skype says it's looking into the issue and hopes to resolve it as soon as possible, but it can't say how long this will take.
Wow.
So what
this might
can
be
you,
this might be Trump, you know.
You know, so anyway, this
the
is
the Russian hacked it. Trump's buddies.
Now it's updating, saying it's now working in some places, so we don't we'll keep trying to sign in here and see whether we can
take a call. Because our brother Mike Diesel might be trying to call in.
He probably is. I'm going to try once again here, see whether we can get it to work. And it's looking like it's... It gets part of the way, but then it
Now, I think earlier, Stuart alluded to the fact that there was a story out that the apparent president-elect, that's how I'm going to refer to him from now on, the apparent president-elect DT, I don't even want to say his name, has intimidated some of the electoral college votes.
No, right, sure.
Voters. I mean, that if that isn't blatant enough for you, I mean, my goodness.
Why should it surprise you that a fascist uses intimidation?
No, it doesn't surprise me, but I mean, it surprises me in a way that got out. I mean, if he's so smart and he works, you know, he knows all the smartest people and he works behind the scenes, how come everybody knows about it? I mean, obviously the electors, having heard the threats, reported it. Like, you know, Donald called me and threatened me. You know, it's like, you can't do that.
He called himself or he had somebody.
Well, that's what we need to find out. Did they elaborate on that, Stu?
Yes. This came to light when one of the electors outed Trump publicly for trying to extort and intimidate him. One member of the Electoral College publicly accused Donald Trump of making threats of political reprisal, including sabotaging the elector's political career.
Man.
And of course, as John Kay said, what would that surprise you that
no.
Fascists would
No,
use?
It doesn't, but it kind of surprises me that he would be that blatant.
Yes.
All right, so in Sweden.
Yes.
I'll talk about Sweden for a second.
Nobel Prize? No, that's Norway, right?
No, it's Sweden.
Is it?
And Sweden has one of the most progressive social policies on education, on trade unions, on retirement, on unemployment.
On all quality of life issues.
On many quality of life issues for its citizens.
Right.
However, its citizens constitute a relatively homogeneous cultural group.
Right.
Now, they're over the past couple of decades, you know, as there have been a lot of immigration mm-hmm. all over Europe, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, in Sweden's case, this is the problem, because in Sweden, almost anybody can get a college education.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, the economy in Sweden, like most parts of the world, still needs a lot of people to wait on tables and to serve
right.
you in restaurants and to perform what shall we say is occupations that might not require a college degree. And it turns out that as more and more, you know, Swedish citizens become eligible for, you know, higher level kinds of work, who's going to do the low wage work? Well, you know, they have a shortage in that area, so they allow immigrants in to do that work, but they do not grant them citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a whole bunch of an immigrant population doing certain kinds of work, but not themselves eligible for the level of benefits, protection, retirement, mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera, that the rest of the Swedish population has. And this, over time, has generated a right wing in Sweden
mm-hmm.
That is not taking power yet, you know, but is, like in some other European countries, is growing under similar pressures. Which is a, well, I'm okay for equality for my folks, but I don't know that we can afford equality for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the United States is very different than these countries because it's no longer racially or national origin wise or practically any way.
Homogeneous.
Homogeneous.
Right.
It's a very diverse and
right
multinational, multicultural, whatever. Right.
Multi-ethnic
country.
Right.
And if we're going to have... But nonetheless, the divisions between races and all these other issues that are very sharp now in the country have to do partly because the impact of no growth or no growth in incomes over the past 42 years, mm-hmm. 44 years, whatever, mm-hmm. Has affected different groups in different ways.
Right.
Now, there was a 90-some percent vote among African Americans for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Okay. But among male white workers, I believe it split, you know, almost 50-50, if not not a majority for Trump, at least in certain right. areas. Okay. Right. Overall, I think it was still a majority for Hillary or very close. But you know, and in key places, obviously. You know, this, you know, let me summarize it this way. Well, you know, I was all for civil rights, you know, when everybody was getting raises, but I ain't getting any raises in the last 10 years. And why should I, you know, who's coming to help me? So why should I still support affirmative action, this, that, and other, blah, 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 blah. Why should I support that group, this group, when my group is not, you know, that's the thing, my group there. So you know, I don't see any way out of that kind of mess and all of the opportunities that it provides fascists like the current president-elect in ways to sow division and, you know, basically hide the donkey here. Mm-hmm. Unless we have a notion of equality that is quite a bit stronger.
That includes everybody.
That includes everybody. And that's partly a cultural question. Partly it's trying to figure out why is it that you're making less money? Is it really because the government's giving some benefit to somebody else and not you, who's probably worse off than you? Okay, you know what's really going on, and you know getting people and you find out, oh my God, you know I have to get along with Indians and Asians and African Americans and. I have to work alongside and deal with people who come from countries where I love to do this. I did this analogy yesterday because I got it out of Alan First, you know, your yep. novel. Mm-hmm. You know, people that come from countries like Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. We had a fellow that at my birthday party from Bulgaria
yeah.
who I remember I sent him a copy of the Alan First book. You know, that one that the first one you recommended there, mm-hmm. Night Soldiers. And he comes back to me. He says, that guy has it exactly right. He says, you know, he says, we're a country that's been marched over by different armies for 2,000 years. Right. Okay. And it says, we trade one slave owner for another every era, you know. And so you get people that come from countries like that, okay, that have been marched over by armies.
Right.
And what's their experience of? What does democracy or equality or equity, you know, mean to those people?
And what we learned in the trade union movement over now centuries of existence, going back to the Revolutionary War with the guilds in Boston and Philadelphia, what we've learned over centuries in the trade union movement is that justice and equality are not just issues of the common good. But they are issues of private interest. To those of us who work for a living, to those of us who have a paycheck signed by somebody else, or in my case, a pension check signed by somebody else, it is in our interest to assure that everybody is treated equitably, because the best way for us to rise, and still I rise, Ms. Maya Angelou, the best way for us to rise is to rise together. And so still we rise. Justice is foundational to our democracy. It is one of the leading aspirations of American history. And from justice derives equality. From equality derives the common good. From equality derives the best way for us to lift our families into a better quality of life. And so, John, your point is very well taken, but it is not new.
It is but apparently it needs to be renewed because I think the divisions in this election show that we got a big problem there.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's no light at the end of the tunnel with this administration. None.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about civil disobedience every day.
Right. Yeah.
Every day. Now, I want to bring some labor news into this discussion. I guess it was from yesterday. Airport workers to strike. Apparently... hundreds of contracted service workers at National Airport in Dulles.
That would be especially Reagan Airport, too.
Right, yeah. Well, they're calling it National. He won't even – our man in D.C. will not even call it Reagan.
Good.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. But they walked off the job yesterday morning to protest poverty wages and the lack of respect from their employer, Huntley Corporation. Huntley.
Yeah.
Huntley Corporation. The workers will be joined by Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring. That's pretty impressive. The Attorney General is going to join them, or did join them.
Yeah.
Virginia Senator Barbara Favola. I guess she's a state senator. The clergy and community supporters for a rally at 7:30 a.m. Yesterday morning. Airport workers have received support from numerous high-level leaders, including U.S. Secretary of Labor Thomas Perez, presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, Congressman Jerry Connolly from Virginia, Democrat, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, D.C. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, Virginia Delegate Jennifer Bosco, and actor and anti-poverty activist Danny Glover. So that's a lot of well-intentioned support. I hope they got something. I haven't really heard the follow-up on it. Also in D.C., they're playing Blood on the Mountain. Opens tomorrow. And in Washington, they're doing this new movie about the problems in Appalachia and especially in West Virginia, the canary in the coal mine. And I guess they're going to have a free screening. And they're going to focus on environmental and economic injustice and corporate control in West Virginia and its rippling effect on all American workers. The film is especially timely given President-elect DT stated intentions of reviving coal mining and reducing environmental and other regulations. It's also especially urgent because the pension and health benefits of 12,500 former Patriot coal miners will end on December 31st, despite bipartisan support of the Miners Protection Act. The D.C. Labor Fest has three free pairs of tickets for the 7:15 show this Friday, which includes a special panel discussion by policy, labor, and legal experts. Blood on the Mountain screens December 16th through the 22nd at the West End Cinema. So there you have it.
All right. So the airport workers, I hope they got some staying power there, especially. Hey,
thanks for that coffee, my brother.
What's the status? And I believe the Million Women March is now going to take place behind the Capitol, right on Independence. So that is going to happen.
So that's between the Capitol and the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
So that might even be better.
Well, you know.
You know, I mean, that's pretty
close. But
it's on
a part of the town that D.C. government manages, not the federal government.
So interesting.
That's why it's happening.
Very
interesting. The Park Service.
Well, there's no room for a million people there. We can all agree on that. There's no room there on Independence Avenue, right?
No, it would be a much bigger crowd. You know, I don't know what's going to happen about that. That's you know, an interesting thing.
I mean, the women are coming from all over the country. They've already made their reservations.
I know, but you know, this business of not allowing them a permit and then you know setting up some provocation.
Oh, absolutely. You know that. Now, our brother from another mother, Michael Moore, the famous documentary filmmaker, is planning some hijinks for the inauguration.
Well, that's good because
if it happens,
it's going to happen.
Yeah, you think it's going to happen?
I think it would be. Look. I mean, it depends on really how many powerful players are ready to say no now and not give it a chance to form. See, that's the problem. You give a chance. If this government gets formed or consolidated, I am absolutely certain what will happen. Okay, that he will form a security apparatus and he'll use it to, start shooting people. That's what Nixon did.
Yes. And the security apparatus is already in place.
It's already in place. He's got Comey. He's got a bunch of stuff. He's appointed all these heads of these different attorney general that'll comply with any of that. And it'll be Nixon and worse.
Homeland Security apparatus is.
You mean Tricky Dick?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the main thing he did was, you know, he set out an army of both provocateurs in the peace movement and straight out assassination teams against the right. African American parts of the militant parts of that movement. I mean, they basically, blew away half the Black Panther Party.
Exactly.
You know, so anything like that. So you'll see. That's what'll happen if he gets a chance to put it together.
Right.
And our phone's not working, buddy.
Wow.
The diesel is here.
Our buddy just showed up, and he's all bundled up. You could barely tell who it was.
So it's not our fault, and it's not Kenny Perdue's fault. It's Skype. Skype is down all of U.S. and Canada.
Right, and Manny Penny, too.
Okay.
So they're going to come on next week.
Right, anyway. Anyway, that's I fear that we ought to get whatever mobilization we can. Do we know what's going to go on here in the buses that are picking up here? I think Mike does. He knows this because he's already signed up for the bus.
He's still frozen. He's still frozen.
She hasn't gone into detail. Come over here. Yeah. She hasn't gone into detail. My wife was trying to register, and they were waiting for the permit. So
you can hear.
Okay. All right. So. That's good. All right.
Speaking of permit, we got in under the wire and just got our health insurance renewed for one more year.
Good job, Diesel.
That's it. Then we're done.
So if you get sick, make sure it's the next year.
Well, you took Renata's advice from yesterday, right?
She told everybody.
Her advice was
renew now.
Okay. And if you're on expanded Medicaid, start getting your health care done now, Stuart.
Yes.
Other people. Okay, so we're just.
Yes.
As long as this thing lasts.
Is there any way I can suggest a fourth microphone, sir?
Yes, you can. Just bring one in.
Will,
I'll plug it right in.
You're in the entertainment business.
They cost about $75, you know.
Now
so
I have three of them.
There you go.
Well, bring one in. We have enough room for one more, actually, on this board. Okay, so.
He's warming the whole place up now. He's doing a little jig here for us.
You know, shaking the whole building.
This is great. This is good. Well, you know, he has a presence that, unlike most of us.
All right, on the economic front, it was determined, another statistical analysis showed that the Trump votes came from counties where there are not many jobs.
Right. The Trump votes came from counties where there's a lot of desperation.
For example, all the districts, the voting districts where Trump prevailed, okay,
right.
Their total contribution to the economy of the United States is 30%.
Wow.
Now you think about a winning population vote that only contributes 30% of it, and that tells you how productive or what the levels of unemployment, wage, low productivity jobs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's what that number reflects.
So, but doesn't that mean that they are hoping that Trump will actually? Oh, I said it. I'm sorry. that DT will actually create jobs. in this country?
Yobs.
Yeah, I mean, is that why they voted for him? Because
depressed? Okay. Now, there's a debate about that, because Trump is talking about a big stimulus package.
Right.
However, he's planning on if he does any stimulus package of any kind, let me just say that it will have some stimulus effect on the mm-hmm. economy, okay? Mm-hmm. Problem is that he's talking about doing it through tax cuts.
Yes. he's talking about getting the private sector to do this massive stimulus program, basically through
guaranteeing their equity.
So this is Reagan 2.
Right.
And we know Reagan 1 didn't work. So he's repeating...
Right,
something that didn't work.
Well, in the process, you know, by doing this, he will avoid prevailing wage. You know,
right.
He will avoid. He'll be able to, you know, do his right to work thing. Mm. And in the end, boy, he's
have some coffee, John.
In the end, he's going. It's going to have a bad.
Good job.
It's
Mike.
Not going to have the stimulus effect that it would have if the government just went out and hired this stuff done.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the companies are going to take the money and do as little as possible to keep the money. I mean,
that's right.
That's the way they operate.
The traditional way that we would do this is by the government contracting with private contractors to do the rebuild our infrastructure. So this would be infrastructure development, which would put people to work at good wages. Family supporting wages, generally under union contracts, but not exclusively, generally under union contracts with health care, training, all the things that you need, not just to work right now, but to improve your capacity to have a family sustaining career as a laborer, as an electrician, as a plumber or pipe fitter, as a carpenter, whatever it is, as a cement mason, whatever it is, would boost our productivity because infrastructure development improves productivity, but would lift the wages of people at the bottom of the economy, which we all know lifts the wages of everybody in the economy, including small business. Because where does your construction worker go at 6:30 in the morning on his or her way to the job site? Well, he or she stops at your Sheetz store or your 7-Eleven to get that cup of coffee and that pack of cigarettes and those two muffins or sausage biscuit, lifting the clerks there, lifting that business, buying gas, lifting that business. And that's the way you really stimulate the economy and grow the economy, not by this scheme to give more of the country's wealth to corporate America.
In a veiled warning to U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, China's ambassador to the United States said on Wednesday that Beijing would never bargain with Washington over issues involving its national sovereignty or territorial integrity. Ambassador Kui Takawatikwama, whatever. speaking to executives of top U.S. companies, said China and the United States need to work to strengthen their relationship. And at the same time, China has now installed, according to a U.S. think tank report, anti-aircraft and other weapons on all seven islands it has built in the South China Sea, raising stakes in a regional dispute as U.S. President-elect Donald Trump signals he's ready to confront Beijing on territorial issues.
Can I also point something out, John?
Yeah.
If the president-elect Orange Bloviator wants to talk about American jobs, let's start with your property in Mar-a-Lago. Okay? This cannot be said enough. This guy imports slave labor You know, there's worker visas, and now I don't know if you saw this, but the 12 or 13 chefs that are being brought back just had their hourly rates cut. So talk to me again about American jobs and unions and stuff, DT.
Oh, he's never been pro-union.
Come on.
You know, he's always
the biggest farce I've ever seen. And for the people that are members of unions that voted for him, shame on you.
Well, I mean, shame on them.
As high as 40%.
Shame on them. But, I mean, partly that has to do with what kind of discussions are we having with the members? I got to ask this question about our local labor council, actually. Do we have any discussions with members? I'm not sure that we do. You know,
not enough.
I see Jim Rogers show up. Now, he's a rep for the UAW, but right. I mean, we'd ought to ask. I mean, what kind of discussions are we actually having with the members?
Well, it's something that we discuss in our meetings, John, and I think you're aware of some of this, that it is a responsibility. We actually represent 34 different unions in our region, in our seven counties, and as far as I know, as long as I've been involved, we've had a very difficult time scheduling, you know, trips to visit these union halls during their meeting days. And this is something we've always talked about doing, but we have yet to do that. We've yet to follow through.
Well,
if we could
agree on a message to take to those things, I mean, I think we ought to put together a team to do that, because I think this out of touch, you know, staying out of touch with you know, what the members are actually doing is a serious problem.
I agree. Okay? I agree.
Don't get too far down in the weeds. This is not about the labor movement. Clearly, the labor movement is part of the solution.
Okay, you're not talking into a microphone now.
Yeah, but you can hear it.
Yeah, I think you can pick it up all the way on the recording, Stuart, so I apologize for, but I mean,
you're gonna have to get closer to
I think what he was saying was that, you know, this isn't just about the unions, and I agree with that, but yes, we you know, and there is some, you know, I don't know that it's, I don't know that John's not absolutely accurate in wanting to make sure that we do not isolate ourselves from anyone. You know, and have conversation. I mean, for example, I was just reading what JB posted that our good friend Stewart had written with regards to fascism. And I was kind of shocked by one of your buddies who commented, kind of dismissive and kind of indicating that Stewart didn't know what he was talking about. And if there's anybody who knows what the hell he's talking about with regards to fascism, it's Stewart Acuff. I'm sorry, I'm going to get a little animated here.
If you're not accepting,
right. I understand you're in this.
Hold it, calm down.
I understand you're in this period.
It's getting warm, John.
I understand you're in this period where you won. Okay, but as many of us have said, congratulations, it's an apparent victory,
right?
But is it really? Now, honestly, tell me what you've won, because like I have said many times before, when this thunder of crap comes rolling down from 1600, you know, Trump Plaza on Pennsylvania Avenue, we are going to have, all of us are going to be affected
absolutely
negatively by absolutely this legislation. Yeah. And I can't help but be able to perceive that. If the other side can't, that's their problem.
Right.
You know, now we can sit here and we can play a big game of, I told you so. I told you so. I know you are, but what am I? I know you are, but what am I? You know, we can play that game like Trump's entire campaign. Or we can say, I'm sorry you were wrong. Let's move forward together. You know, that's one of the, I mean, we have to be able to be accepting, because this is a free society. And unfortunately, John, like you said earlier, it allows a lot of creation of bad media.
Well, I just mean that if your members are, you know, voting differently than your leadership is resolving every week, you got a problem, okay?
Right.
That if you don't deal with it, it's going to wipe you out.
Right.
And, I mean, you know, I was a lot of times, you know, it was never a particular problem for me in the trade union movement that if the members wanted to vote to do something that I didn't think was a good idea, okay? Nonetheless, I mean, I'm a profound believer that the only way that ordinary people acquire, you know, true knowledge is through, usually through trial and error, okay? And, You know, so I was always, well, you want to, you know, I'm a little bit like Jim Matlis and the pastry tray story about, you know, Jim was always very firm about not engaging in any activity, especially at national bargaining with the General Electric Company, that would lead them to believe that there was some kind of softness on your side of the table, okay? That, and so when the company would bring in, you know, the best pastries of New York City or Fairfield, Connecticut, wherever they were meeting, you know, and put them all down there in front of the union bargaining committee, and say, "Hey, man, it was what?
Yeah, order that bread from Royalicious. That's the best bread in town."
Well, whatever. So, you know, Jim was, you know, he just hated that stuff. Okay, yeah. But nonetheless, he could tell one day that his committee was slavering over the many treats there. And he said, "All right, if you guys are going to go to hell, I'm your elected leader. I'm going to go first."
I remember you saying that before.
Yeah, right. You know, so...
this is the best bagels and logs I have ever had.
And but there is something to be said for that, okay? I mean, who are your people? I mean, kind of thing. And if you got folks that are... I mean, I'm betting that except for a few, opium-soaked fanatics,
right?
That most people that are confused about these matters, you know, have actually, you know, fairly ordinary aspirations. And the big problem is, okay, you want to have more manufacturing jobs. You want to have a job that pays more. You want to have this. You want, you know. I mean, you want you want a fair shake. You're not getting one. I mean, so what is it? You start talking about, hey, why don't you write the top of your list what would make your life better? And, you know, let's talk about how to get that.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, maybe everybody's confused and needs to restart about, okay, how do you actually do that? Mm-hmm. And before you start getting, drinking the Kool-Aid of, first we got to get rid of all the blacks and the Asians.
Hey, whoa, slow down, John. It's orange Kool-Aid.
Whatever. Right, you know. That's
delicious, that's austerity, John. That tastes,
So I think we ought to try to have conversations with the members and their local unions.
Every time we talk about this, I honestly, and I've been listening to some Bruce lately. And every time we talk about this, the line from, you know, your hometown comes, you know, Foreman says these jobs are going, boys, and they ain't coming back. It just keeps resonating in my head because the reality is a lot of our entire industries have been sold out from under us wholesale. And a lot of folks don't understand that. A lot of folks don't get that. Now, also, too, automation has had a lot to do with, you know, the computerized, mechanized production facilities, which in many ways are cheaper and more efficient, you know, and that's unfortunate, but we have to have some mechanisms in place, I think, to take transition people out of certain jobs, i.e. coal miners, on and on, so we have some type of retraining to where you can't just, you know, as Stuart was saying, you can't just go, hey, listen, here's a 10, it's really a 5. Good luck with those trailer payments. You know, we have to have some kind of acknowledgement that people need a certain amount of money to exist, to live and live comfortably. Right. In watching Bernie the other night with Chris Hayes in Kenosha, you know, one of the points was the young lady sitting at the single mom, and I understood where she was coming from. She said, you know, look, I'm not for raising the minimum wage. And I understand that because her whole point was, everything's going to get more expensive. No, actually it's not. I mean, if you look at, places where it has already been done, Seattle, the price of goods and services has gone down because more people have money to buy goods and services. So I think that's important to recognize.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you have to, and the hard part about this is we're up against such a massive talking point, multimedia conglomerate that just keeps sticking these ideas constantly in people's heads. And it's like, it's really sad because you see people, you know, you love, you care about, actually believe this stuff, right? You know, and that's certainly unsettling, you know.
Well, Stuart and I saw the CIA director from the Bush administration, McCarthy,
Michael Hayden.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was also NSA, right? And he came on and just said, you know, unequivocally, there's big problems with this election.
Yes.
Big problems.
Well, yeah, Hayden, and then
he said it's unprecedented the amount of interference from foreign governments.
Right, and Bush is ethics, the lawyer in charge of ethics for that White House,
and he also
came out and said the exact same thing.
And he also attacked DT directly,
right,
saying that his speech was reckless.
Yeah.
And we all figured that, but this is a guy that knows. This guy had the job. He was in.
It's a fascinating thing to think.
It is.
To think that he said.
Yeah.
He said during the election, hack more of our emails. We could use that, Russia.
Right.
We're going to use that. We're going to use that.
Right.
I mean, look at my tiny hands. Look over there.
All right. So assume for a moment that you're technically. Assume for the moment that you're not going to be able to technically prevent foreign governments from interfering directly in U.S. elections.
Just
assume that it's technically not possible to do that, to prevent that.
Oh.
Right.
Now, what next?
Well, I don't know specifically what next, but this brings up a very, very interesting point that we had brought up yesterday, John, that we were talking about.
Back to paper ballots.
Well, I don't know that it's just a validation of paper ballots, but I think you can't have multiple levels of different applications of voting hoping to achieve a result that's similar in Wisconsin to what, unless you have cross-check, then you can have the outcome you need. What's your name? Barry Johnson? I'm sorry, there's a Barry Johnson in Florida. You're the same guy. Get him off the voter roll.
Yeah, yeah.
We, you know, John, we don't need to know today what's next. I mean, what's next is 4 years of resistance to the Trump administration, to growing racism and fascism in America. That's what's next. Regardless of the mechanisms that are going to be tried between now and when the electors meet, the intelligence briefing for all the electors, whether or not we can get enough electors not to vote for Trump to throw it into the House of Representatives, that is temporary. But what is next is resistance to this mindset. Look, I'm just reading Joseph Stiglitz, the former chief economist of the World Bank, professor at Columbia University, the winner of the Nobel Prize in economics. And Stiglitz says, Donald Trump's victory in the United States presidential election has made one thing abundantly clear. Too many Americans, particularly white male Americans, feel left behind. And it is not just a feeling. Many Americans really have been left behind. It can be seen in the data no less clearly than in their anger. And as I have argued repeatedly, an economic system that doesn't deliver for large parts of the population is a failed economic system.
Yeah, so, but part of that failure is that you can't remain national. I think that's going to be an increasing element in the equation, is that you're, everything you do more and more, you know, affects everybody else in the world. And now, you know, players from all over the world have the ability to weigh into the media in the United States in ways that, you know, maybe were going on before, but certainly weren't as highly profiled. And I mean, obviously, anything that Vladimir Putin can do, the Chinese government can do. Okay,
I don't let them do the things that you think.
And you know, any European government.
This is the only station that I use your English. I don't speak English.
They have the technical ability.
Lassie Danya, comrade.
I don't. I just, it starts to, I agree with everything with what Stuart's saying. I mean, I just, I keep wanting to focus culturally, though, on the values of a certain level of internationalism, because there's a trap in, for example, right now we blame, we start a big witch hunt on, or we give someone an excuse to start a big witch hunt on Russia, okay, which will lead exactly where in the Congress of the United States. See, I'm not entirely sure where that will lead. I mean, we've had, you know, when you start a witch hunt on one thing, it's very easy for your adversaries to turn it into something else.
Charlie Flame.
Yeah, okay. Let me, go ahead, Bernie.
Let me just push back against...
Bernie Sanders.
Allow me to just push back against your comment about this being a witch hunt. It's very, very disturbing that someone has been able to access or attack an entire entity of our governing body. That concerns me. And it also, too, should concern the Republicans. In fact, it should concern the president-elect. And I'm hoping it does. Here on Epic Radio.
So Bernie, if in fact my wish comes true,
yes,
and the Electoral College refutes the early results, the apparent results,
yes,
and makes it in favor of HRC,
yes,
and it goes, like Stuart alluded to earlier, it goes back to the House of Representatives,
yes,
which is completely dominated by the other side,
yes,
do they have the temerity and the just the preservation of the democracy to the point where they would actually confirm those results?
I never do this, but let me answer that with two answers. One, my hopeful answer would be no. My realistic answer, they don't care. Yes. Donald Trump, whether we like it or not, is going to be the next president of the United States.
Oh, that's tough, Bernie.
Very, very unfortunate.
I was hoping you'd give me a little bit of hope.
I was hoping to, too. But
you know,
let me say this. There is still hope because of our campaign. We touched a lot of Republicans, a lot of independents, and a lot of Democrats. So I'll say it again. I'll keep saying it until I'm gone. Enough is enough.
Good job, Bernie. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, that's great.
It's top of the hour, and Labor Beat radio show is...
time for us to retire to the county commission.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, maybe. All right. Well, listen, thank you guys for filling in. We were going to have two great calls. Yeah. Skype is still down nationally, so...
Yeah, well,
yeah, that's not, hey, stuff, yeah, that's not our happens. Fault. That's
They've probably
our...
been hacked. They've probably,
you know,
been hacked.
You know, it probably happened on November 8th.
Can I just
and
say...
it's just carryover.
One thing, the Republicans, the whole machine, local, state, federal, all remind me of Gollum. All they want is the ring. My precious. Ring, my precious. Yes, we want it. We need it.
All right. Thanks for Gollum. To Gollum is closing off the show today at Labor Beat. You're listening to Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio. John Case, J.B. Christensen, Stuart Acuff, and Mike Diesel this morning. It's kind of a guy's thing here, I guess. But that's okay. We, we'll try not to. We'll try to keep it clean if we can. Anyway, so we'll be back tomorrow for Paris on the Potomac, and I'll update you a little bit soon about what that's going to be in a minute. Gail Becker's been lining up some guests, and I'll find out, I'm sure, later today what that's going to be. And we'll post it on our blog. Check out www.enlightenradio.org if you want to find out what the latest happening is, or go on Facebook to the Labor Beat Radio Show. And that's always, you know, an active place, too. Okay, take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.
What's the issue?